GM, and welcome back to Zero Rights Reserved, a weekly podcast about nouns, DAOs, NFTs, Ethereum, and more, brought to you by the Noun Square Media Collective. I'm your host, Tony Hawk. My co-host this week is Robot Fish Girl, and this week we are super lucky to be joined by one half of the dynamic duo behind Dead Fellas, Syke. We chat about his journey as an artist and as the founder of one of the most successful NFT-based communities. And then we dig in to hear all the alpha about their upcoming non-TCG TCG called RIP. And speaking of RIP, a word of warning that during the recording of this interview, Syke's region was experiencing a nasty storm and his Wi-Fi kept cutting in and out. As a result, we struggled with some technical difficulties, but we've done our best to fix it all in post, as they say. We hope you enjoy this episode. And if you do, please like and subscribe. Rate us 5 stars on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It does help a lot. Let go.
I don't have any noggles, but I got my round ones.
That's exactly. You're IRL nounish. That's even better. So, all right, let's jump into it. Syke, welcome to ZeroPod, sir. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming. We're looking forward to chatting about Dead Fellas and your journey and RIP and everything in between. So maybe a good place to start is if you could kind of walk us through your history before Web3. We'd love to hear a little bit about your journey as an artist before you even knew what a JPEG was, before you even knew what an NFT was.
All right. So I've always been an artist since being young. Fell in love with digital art during university, mostly like vector art, just anything kind of digital, glitch art, a lot of different things just in terms of essentially anything produced on a computer. From there, just fell in with like agency illustration, a lot of different like ad work, essentially just chasing getting paid and then doing your own things on the side. Through the side work, I ended up joining Deathcore, which is run by Justin Maller, started a long time ago. A lot of Australians in there, bunch of just like really brilliant art directors and stuff around the world in there. And then just got introduced to like a really wide range of digital art, a lot of different, I guess, like abstract work, like 3D abstract work and different things that were really exciting at the time. And then essentially just moved through the agency scene, fell into art directing, creative directing, ended up running agencies for a little while, mostly in, well, for about 10 years, in like just full stack, anything, mostly fell into, interactive work in data, UI, UX, interactive work across, data, and then also just like small scale interactives for different activations, things like that for like ESPN, did a lot of work for the Olympics, and then Tokyo Olympics, which I was very excited for and we were very deep with, got cancelled. So that was very unexpected, but yeah, also left a lot of room to move. And looping back to Deathcore, a lot of the people that were in Deathcore were coming back, seeing that digital art was being validated. A lot of people essentially just slowed down their activity because it was very hard to have a viable just path, even just like to have a bit of a side hustle and be able to justify the amount of time that you're pouring into something, and just like to be treated with respect. I think that a lot of people were excited for, because there was just a real like validation of digital artists that was happening in the early NFT phase. So everyone was very excited. We did some group drops with Nifty. I fell in with like 4156 and a bunch of punks through Crypto Voxels. Was doing some branding for their events for Pepe and things like that. I really respected what 4156 was doing with just like the identity creation around his punk. So yeah. That kind of just like introduced me to a lot of people that were in the Crypto Voxel scene at the time, but also kind of like in that circle around 4156. So like Last Punk and like Claire Silver and a lot of people that were in the kind of some of those curated art days in Crypto Voxels. Lastpunk ended up being our Solidity dev for Deadfellas. And one of the
did
first
you know that robot for sure?
The first people
I actually did, but I only knew that because I found out on 9 o'clock the other day.
Okay, yeah. Psych mentioned it to me. Yeah, I was like, wow, no way. I love 9999. He's amazing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just brilliant and really supportive. Like one of the first people that I kind of pitched like what we were thinking of doing, because we just didn't really see anything that was exciting like us as people within the PFP scene. Like I really liked the digital identity side of it, like being able to hook onto something and like flesh that out. And because that was almost like the whole purpose of interoperability in my eyes was like that consistency of identity, consistency of ownership over your own digital identity and things like that. Because it's essentially just like when someone wants to have that digital identity, you like want that consistency, don't you? So that you can actually have that same, essentially like utility of being a person, but replaced with a digital identity, which I think is really exciting and something that we'll continue to see, fleshed out, I think, through like metaverses and, like different, I think Web3 enabled tech and things like that. But I think that there just wasn't enough endpoints. Like you see where people were trying to like create interoperable assets, but they were creating them for places that no one wanted to be. So I think that it was just kind of like experimentation up to this point.
If we can rewind just for a minute, Psych, going back to when you said you were in DepthCore and you guys were hearing about NFTs, and it sounds like you guys just kind of grokked it immediately and that you kind of understood what it meant for digital artists in terms of, like you said, verifying what you were doing. But do you remember like what sort of drew you into saying, okay, there might be something here? Because for some it's a leap, but it sounds like for you guys it was natural.
It was I think that like, because everyone was also dabbling in crypto. A few of the guys within DepthCore were also like early the platforms that were popping up with Ethereum attached, with like art creation and things like that. So a few people were like just following along, and then slowly saw a bit of a ramp up with a few different Australian artists. And I think it was probably just like some of the like contract standards that came out and people started talking about the royalty side and also just the like immutable side of like knowing that a certain artist produced this and like where it came from and that you can actually own something as a digital asset. I think that those like basically those
provenance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ownership, yeah. Royalties, and also like I said, like respect was like a huge thing. Because there was people in DepthCore that had been doing digital art since they were like 12, like the experimental like glitch art stuff, like experimental like 3D work. And it was like in the Photoshop magazines at the time and the different 3D magazines and stuff like that. But beyond that, it was just kind of like everyone would be like, yeah, but it's like digital artwork. So, you know, and it was kind of nice to see that history come back in and people like, oh, like we actually respect the fact that there's been so many people doing this for so long. So that was nice to see. And I think that just kind of was a huge vibe, honestly. Like people were really excited. Saw a lot of people I hadn't seen active in probably like 10 years. So it just felt really good to see where everyone was at. Like I said, most people were like art directors by that point, like mostly in the main cities around the world. So everyone was so busy, but we got to like all hang out again, which was nice.
It's interesting because we had Jack Butcher on the show 2 weeks ago. And he was telling his history, and he also was in the agency sort of realm for 10 plus years and had a very similar path into NFTs where just, you know, he was already making digital art and his community that kind of cropped up around that was like, hey, you know, you should be putting these on chain. And then he kind of, you know, realized it was a good fit. But
yeah,
many such cases.
I think it's a pretty suited, I would say, like avenue to be in. You're used to the fast-paced nature of production. You get used to essentially like anyone that's been working on like a startup that works like essentially any agency that works with startups or works with like ad agencies or any of those kind of like large corporations connected through like an agency in the middle, like you're being steamrolled every single day for something. Like you need to do last minute edits constantly every single day. Like you're on usually like full stack, like working across multiple different types of tech, different developer teams from art. And then you've also got writers, you've got like voiceover, you've got so many different things that go into the mix. So I think that flexibility and pressure, just being used to that in your daily life, was something that like really helped people cope when they actually got into the crypto and the Web3 scene when NFT started kicking off, especially like if you were trying to run a project, because it really was just all systems go, essentially.
Speaking of trying to run a project, how did Deadfellas happen? Tell us the story of you know, how that inspiration occurred.
Digital identity paired with what we were seeing in the like the PFP project side was like mostly things that we didn't really identify with. There was like a huge disparity with also just gender representation that we felt like needed to be addressed. So that's something that we really purposely set out to figure out through Deadfellas, essentially just not even really naming genders, just having something that everyone can identify with in different ways across Deadfellas. Also, just
plus if you were a zombie too, like you had no PFPs available to you for representation.
Yeah. Exactly. And also,
definitely appreciate love the running the gamut of gender representation.
Yeah, and that was essentially it. It was just like everything was just like very like I don't like to say it, but it's like just very bro-y. It was like just all
just, no, you're right. That's
men.
Say it.
It's like PFPs of men. And it was just like even just the fact that just like the spectrum of being masculine was just like so strangely pigeonholed even across these ones, with just like only ever just like being muscly and having like just like streetwear. And it was just like, we just felt like it was just missing a huge spectrum of people that exist. And also we just really love zombies. And we were just noticing like, it was just part of the Web3 scene. It was like, there was those particular things that people really hooked onto. One of them was zombies, like obviously like through punks as well, through just being something that people like thought was cool, but was also like a rarity aspect.
It's like, what if they were all rare?
Exactly. And we did the same thing. So in Deadfellas, we were I believe the first collection where there is an even distribution of every single trait. One thing that I didn't like was that essentially a lot of the collections that you saw on the generative side would purposely seed like less impressive traits in, but they would also, because they're less impressive, be the ones that you would see the most. So whenever you actually got introduced to looking at the like collection of art underneath the collection, it would be mostly the stuff that like was terrible. And sometimes
that's so
it
true.
Would be embarrassing.
It's like don't look at the floor. Look, you know, like yeah. Sort by highest price, because those are the good ones.
Exactly. But no one sorts by highest price. So it's kind of like, What are people looking at? What are you actually seeing? And so the way that we introduced rarity into the mix was that we actually had a degrade system. So every single trait has three stages of degrade. So there's fresh, which is essentially just not really degraded at all. There's damage, which is like the in-between, and then rotten. And so there was rarity within that, and that was applied to every different trait. And within Deadfellas, the most important thing essentially, like in terms of rarity, was this the statistical rarity of having a perfect basically flush. So if you've got a Deadfella that's completely fresh or completely damaged or completely rotten, of which I think there's only 7 in the collection that came out completely.
It's like that Mario game. It's like that Mario game where the three pieces of mushroom had to line up. And if you got ding, 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 like all three fresh, then
when you go into the like into that. Toad's house.
Yeah. It's exactly that. So it was basically just like allowing that full distribution of all of the traits to essentially intermingle, so that we had a really varied mix of everything. And then there's the rarity in there for people that liked it. And then also just the variance that some people like their zombies really gory. Some people are like, oh, actually, I just kind of like the clean one, because I like to use it as my PFP. And it's on my LinkedIn, so I can't like be bleeding and
that's
stuff
right
like that.
Yeah.
I can't be damaged on my LinkedIn.
You exactly. Can't have SFW zombies on LinkedIn. We're now in 2023. Obviously, the PFP mania started 2 years ago now. You guys are still around, still building, still building. What do you think it takes to make a lasting community in Web3? Because most didn't make it.
I would say, like, we made a really purposeful drive to essentially cultivate everyone that was brought into the Deadfellas brand, like be it different collectors or artists or anyone in the periphery, that it really was not a financial focus. Obviously there's always financials with the way that things were going in the markets, but we just always cultivated basically the mentality that like we're here to just do cool things, create cool things, like kind of push it forward as a brand, and just do our best to come out the other side with just like really cool tech, cool products, things like that. So I think that's really helped with people just essentially aligning on none of that has fallen away from us. Like we continue to drive forward on everything that we've always been talking about. So like our Discord's constantly active still. And it's just people talking the same way that they always have. Obviously, there's negativity when you attach the flux of crypto, the flux of just like everything in economics or politics at any one time. So, you know, everyone feels that when you're a large community, you know, like you kind of like feel the tides shift as things move.
Imagine when you don't make it about number go up, then suddenly, you know, people don't care as much when number go down.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it, because the mission and everything that you're trying to create is something that's completely detached to that. And I think that anything that was being released at the time that actually was behaving in that way is just like it was counterintuitive to what you should have been even in the space in the first place for. So I think that anyone that kind of pinned their hopes on a creator that was essentially just driving towards the financial side, like it's either was completely illegal or it's just like, what are you going to expect? What happens with a financially driven individual? So like a lot of people disappeared, a lot of people just basically like hung it up or sold it. Or
especially with the predominant model being, we'll give you all of this money up front and then you build us something, like, you know, so like you said, a lot of these more financially motivated people were like, how about I just take the money up front and you guys keep the JPEGs?
I do wonder why people are so much more careful with Kickstarter than they are with NFTs, when a lot of projects work the same way.
It's a culture though, right? Like when you're going to a Kickstarter, you're there, it's in the name. You're there to help someone kickstart their idea. And the benefit you get from that is maybe you're like an early adopter. And there are NFT projects that are like that, but that's not the predominant culture that we saw in 2021. It was more about, you know, how can I get in this, you know, number go up? How can I make money? Speculation.
So late 2022, like I was familiar with probably three projects that were geared up to essentially make a Web3 game that was not something that they wanted to be large scale. It was just kind of like small things that were passion projects where they're like, well, I can essentially use this as a way to do a pre-sale and essentially have the same format as a Kickstarter through product sale. And they just went to Kickstarter instead. They just packed their bags up because they're like, well, like this is viable as something that isn't Web3. I wish that we could have done this because it made sense for the format of what they were creating. But they're like, it just makes no sense. Like we'll just go get it kickstarted immediately. And we don't need to deal with the vitriol of the space of people coming in and not asking about like how fun is it going to be, or like inquiring about like what's the art going to be like and that kind of thing. It's like literally just the financial side, which, you know, like it can just destroy communities. So I understand where people's mentalities were lying. And I think that like a lot of, if you're an honest consultant in the space, I think a lot of consultants in the space right now are saying like, just either sit it on ice and work on it. And then you can kind of like ride the ride the wave of adoption, maybe like in the next like 2 years as things kind of like chill out a little bit, especially like on the gaming side.
Yeah. It's really sad though. It's sad when a technology is so well suited to a particular purpose and yet in a way is just ruined by like greed, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, I don't think that we're going to really see much like movement right now, except from essentially just like people ducking back to kind of get their heads back down on maybe like the infrastructure layers of crypto. And then like as things turn around, hopefully, and you see some kind of like some large shifts in like interest, we'll like come back to like apps, and you'll see a lot of these like productions that are like in the gaming sphere start to kick off. And I think that will kind of like turn back around, and hopefully it isn't the exact same cycle in terms of just like attaching financials to everything. But unfortunately, it just seems like such an intrinsic part of the space that if you do decouple it, it's a very hard road to do anything like that. Like if you had a set mechanic to have zero shift on assets and things like that, I think that it would be very hard to even. Yeah, because people would just start... Like the DeFi crowd come in, they're like, yeah, but that's not decentralization. So I think that a lot of us are our own worst enemy, right? In trying to find where that line is of what you're comfortable with on the DeFi side, and like self sovereignty over an asset and what you should be allowed to do with it, and like what that freedom is.
It's interesting because when you mentioned the DeFi folks, you went to decentralization, which is something they care about a lot. But what I thought you were going to say was something more about the financialization of everything in the space. Because to me, especially with what Nouns has just gone through, which was essentially kind of a battle between, you know, those who valued the meme value of Nouns versus those who valued the DeFi value of a treasury in a DAO. There's something to be said there for those people that just think that everything is a financial instrument, that it makes it very difficult for artists to, like you said, figure out a way to authentically, you know, build communities around their art.
I think across like so many different communities and projects, and I think the Nouns one probably surprises me the most, because when you looked at Nouns, like if you're around from the beginning, like I was kicking around in the Nouns Discord when like Gremlin and everyone was just like doing test art and things like that. And like, it was always obvious. I thought it was obvious what the mission of Nouns was. So for you to just suddenly show up when it was like just a daily auction, like there's a lot of messaging around what was happening. Some of the best builders and minds in the space were already active within the Nouns ecosystem. Like if you jumped in the Discord, you saw what was happening and what was going on. So for you to jump in and then like grab one and then just be like, I don't get it. No, like why are you guys making these decisions around, like why are you spending the treasure? And it's kind of like
did you read the white paper?
You just wanted to win the auction? Like, I just don't understand. But obviously like there was enough pressure there because like there was actually a significant amount of Nouns owners that actually did that, took part in that fork, right? So
not that we have enough time to dig into this particular rabbit hole on this space, but I mean, it's important to realize that with that fork, like 50% of the tokens left, but only one third of the Nouners left. So what we really saw was at least more than half of the people that forked, it was just a trade. And then there's the other half of the half. So there's a half of the third. So there's like one sixth of the DAO are those people that you were talking about. They're like, this is not my Nouns. My Nouns looks like this. And even though I kind of agree with what you're saying, like, why did you come into this project that's been very clear about its goals since the beginning and then decide you wanted something else? That's okay. They're still allowed to do that. And I'm glad they forked, and I hope they do something cool is where I land on that.
Yeah, but essentially what I was just making was that alignment that like if you have those disparities of view with something that was also just very well messaged and also like very slow moving in terms of like how it was gaining momentum just on the dailies,
you're obviously no hope for anyone else.
You're obviously going to have the same disparity in lower cost projects where people were just kind of picking them up on a whim and then being like, hey, so like, yeah. I just got this. Like, where can I find the Twitter?
All right. I wanted to ask you one more question about nouns, and then we'd like to get into chatting about RIP. As you said, you were around the Discord in early days. And so I guess you've been sort of an outside observer of nouns since day one. I'm just curious what you think about nouns and why you think nouns has persisted, you know, this long, similar to Dead Fellas.
I think it was just like, it just had a clear vision that was like setting out to actually achieve something. And I think that just gave people a purpose that wanted to be part of that. And I think that's just, it gives people something to work towards. It gives people like a group purpose. And I think that's just something that really fosters community really well. Obviously, like, it also helped that the people that actually put together the contracts, put together the actual structures for what they wanted nouns to be able to achieve and fund were all done so in an intelligent way that actually did actually see things coming out. And there was just a lot of intelligent decisions made in the beginning that ended up filtering through and being effective. And just like, essentially just like love and dedication, really. Like, you saw people like even just really caring about the early DAO structures that popped up pretty early, like with Shark DAO. Was that the first one? Where essentially it was just like DAOs forming around the different nouns. And like people actually caring enough to like really like see how that is going to impact everything. Afterwards, it seemed like an obvious thing that would pop up just because people wanted to pool to be able to become a noun holder. But, you know, smaller offshoot communities happening. Like, yeah, I think that it was just like nouns is a case study for a lot of this stuff, I think. So I think that it's just like positive because people cared when they actually started the whole thing. Right. It was built for a purpose. And now, like, you see the people that are left over after the fork, and a lot of people like still have the exact same vision for what they want to do with how the treasury works. And it's just refinements. Right. What popped up in the spaces the other day around just having even checkpointing and kind of like drip feeding of funds from a prop so that you can actually have some like ongoing content and keep those teams kind of tied in and then also a bit more accountable. Whereas, you know, those are the things that you learn along the way. And you also learn those points connected with when people actually even like to engage, because you're kind of balancing two things, right? Like the people that want to actually deliver and get their props accepted through nouns, but then you're also dealing with needing people to show up and vote and actually care. So, you know, checkpointing systems and all those things have to be weighed up against, like, will someone actually show up and okay it and like keep it moving?
Yeah.
Yeah. And will someone show up and do it as well? Like, in terms of just attracting the builder energy also.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that like that came up as well. I think that the moment that people see that like the green light's back on again, with not just having holdups on people not knowing like what's going to happen, just essentially just like keep the treasury locked down because everyone was planning this fork stuff. I think that it's going to be probably an exciting couple of months for nouns as people kind of like reactivate and pop back on the things that they were either even planning to put up as props.
We lost you on the screen, but it says the recording is continuing and live video will return when internet improves. There we go. I feel like that's like...
Disconnections will continue until morale improves.
It's because I'm just like in a casual storm in Australia. It's like pretty common, but there's just like trees flapping around sideways outside my window. So that's most likely.
Just casual.
Just casual. Everything in Australia is trying to kill you, including the trees.
That's how it is. Seaside Australia, just like it's just constant storms and stuff.
You have the 10 most poisonous arachnids on the planet. You have 9 of them. The ocean near Australia is exclusively inhabited by things designed to kill you: sharks, jellyfish, swimming knives. They're all in there. And now the weather.
And the weather as well. Yeah.
But the beaches, really nice.
But the patch is,
you know.
I do want to get to RIPTCG immediately, but I have to ask about this just for my own satisfaction. There is a Deadfellas Twitch team.
There is,
how
yes.
did this happen? How does one get involved with this?
So it was very purposely grassroots. There was like people that are just naturally gamers. A lot of people that were hanging out in our voice chat a lot, gaming. A lot of people that were already streamers or had streamed for a long time and then kind of let it go and wanted to pick it back up. Obviously, we also released VTube rigs for every Deadfellas token. So essentially, if you pick up any, there's a VTube rig attached of that one. Which you can Twitch stream with, you can use in video chats, you can use essentially anywhere through Hologram.
That's cool, which is incredible. And
yeah, I think it's really cool. I think we've got the best ones, honestly, on the market. I'm not a big fan of the VR style of just covering your head over. I really love like the immersive aspect of us also retaining the brand, because we did them in it's essentially like that live 2D style of... Yeah. A PNG tuber.
PNG tuber, with. Yeah. That's the kind I make.
It just retains. It retains the vibe of the actual original art, which I think is really important. And essentially just the retainment of the character. Like it doesn't feel like just a random step away. It really feels like a continuation of the style. So yeah. They did a great job on those ones, which naturally feeds us into Twitch. So a lot of the streamers that we work with on the Twitch team, they use their Deadfellas. Not everyone has to. Like we are slowly coming to, not coming to terms, but essentially just coming up with the plans of like, how do you have someone that's like a hybrid? Because obviously, as we begin to target larger streamers, and kind of have people onboarding through either licensing deals or things through RIP, we have to find that balance of like, how does the Deadfellas brand and the VTubing side of content creation mix in with someone who their face is their brand, essentially. So
yeah,
that's what we're exploring now.
By the way, I also joined the Deadfellas Discord this afternoon because I thought I had already been in it for forever and just was inactive. And then I realized the reason I was inactive was because I wasn't in it in the first place. So I fixed that.
Horrible.
Which should tell you about my Discord organizational structure or lack thereof.
If you're in Web3, you've got at least 200. You hit the cap a long time ago. So
and 75 of them are nouns.
What you do for organization is you drag the good ones to the top and you just let the other ones die down in the bottom. Then you just never check.
I've got five Discords, of which I won't tell you which ones they were to play favorites, but obviously Deadfellas is one of them, but I've got five, and then all of them are in just like this, just dumpster folder.
Mm-hmm. My top 10 are all nounish and cryptodes. So my top 10 servers are all like some kind of a nounish.
So there's a reason I could only dive so far into nouns, because it's honestly such a large ecosystem that they'd be like, oh, you need to join the nounish noun nouns of noun town.
Hey dog, we heard you like nouns, so we put some nouns in your nouns.
Put some nouns in your nouns so you can noun while you noun. Let's talk about RIPTCG. Background on RIPTCG.
You got me trapped.
What is it for people who don't already know?
So the way I'm describing it is it's the anti-TCG TCG. So what we're creating is essentially the TCG mechanics of essentially having the characters encapsulated within a card. Like you attach those stat blocks, you attach the character art and a lot of the things that allow it to be essentially a collectible item that can be shifted around and slotted into decks and that kind of thing on the mechanic side of a TCG. But it plays very much like something that's new. It's a TCG with very much without the gameplay of a TCG. So we're bringing essentially a very tight gameplay loop, very fast gameplay, action-based gameplay that is essentially just like a cinematic take on like what you can actually do with the TCG format. So using those cards just to encapsulate the characters, do storytelling, attach different unlockables, things like that, that just allow that to be like an easily accessible and familiar system to collect and, you know, organize those different items and characters. But when you actually bring them into the field of play, it's a very different game that you're used to. So very much not just a tabletop simulator. I think it's a big weakness of the TCG industry in general, just across digital, that it's just always this direct interpretation of playing a tabletop game, which right. I think
you're
is
playing like tabletop simulator, but with some bells and whistles.
It's a symptom of nostalgia, honestly, I think, that people just that grew up with TCGs, they really love it. Like that's what they kind of attach their emotions to.
Skeuomorphic. Everything's always designed after real life items in the digital realm.
Yeah. So I think like it can always be a benefit. I think that especially when it provides familiarity to systems and it just helps people pick something up quicker. But I think that it's just holding the format back. So that's something that we want to evolve, and I'm confident that we can actually can confidently do. So it's a blend of PvP. But we've also got essentially a modular system where if you've played something like Darkest Dungeon, there is like a survival horror, like single player PvE side to the system as well. So something that's a bit broad.
You were just mentioning about, the design space being maybe held back a little bit by what a physical tabletop looks like. And that kind of reminds me of a quote one time of an architect who was learning about Web3. And he started getting into Ohm. He was going through 6529's gallery and stuff like that. And he was like, you know, my biggest problem with this is that it's actually beautifully architected, but it's all architected as though physics exists and physics doesn't exist. He's like, where's the like doors on the ceiling? And like, why can't I float around and look at art? Like, why does this look like something on Earth?
Yeah.
And anyway, what you said kind of reminded me of that. Like, there's no reason why a digital game has to be constrained to those parameters, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's just something that like you even see a lot of TCGs in the digital space, they'll be essentially just confining the gameplay and confining a lot of the systems to something where like you essentially would be able to replicate it if you printed it all out and played it on a tabletop. And I get that like a lot of, like we've done the same thing in terms of validating the game mechanics. Like you pen and paper it for ages at the start and it just makes sense. But there's certain 100%. Things that like you can move beyond that. Like you don't need to have things that you know have to be replicated. Like I think that like a lot of like in the digital space, it seems like a lot of producers and just like people that get into it in the first place, like kind of hope that one day it'll become like a physical version. But I think that it just like it's just restraints. So
right. there is a certain advantage to making it skeuomorphic again, to some degree though, from a game design perspective, because on some level, well, it's like, if anybody who's ever sent out a cold marketing email knows that if you're sending things out, you know, you don't write an email that's above like a fourth grade reading level, because nobody's going to read it. I feel like you can apply similar principles to game design. You have to have something that's familiar for people to latch onto, where nobody's going to play the thing. They're just going to bounce off.
So that's exactly why we're essentially just even calling this a TCG. Because like someone brought up the other day, like, perfect. Oh, but there's so many card games. And it's like, well, you know, like in the game format that we're creating, like we could call the cards, like, and you've seen this happen sometimes, like we could call them pods, or we could call them containers, or like spaceships, or like literally anything that just, it's essentially just a container. It's the same conversation.
You can call them nouns.
Literally, it's just like any name that you think of for a container, because it's literally all it is. Like it just, it's like the same conversation around NFT. Like people are like, what's an NFT? It's like, it's
a digital collectible.
Literally fucking anything, you know?
Yeah.
So
we had like a conversation with a guest, our guest last week. We had a conversation with about how he, this is Chris Carella, he founded two DAOs that he doesn't like to call DAOs. And so we talked a little bit about like, why call them DAOs if they're not DAOs? And he's like, well, people know what DAOs are. So there's like, there's some value. There's some value in like the signaling of that, even if you don't want it to be decentralized, autonomous, or organized, you know, but you still want to call it a DAO. Because anyway, just as an example, right? So
Well, yeah, and it's that exact familiarity why we're actually going for the game format, because it does lend itself to a lot of different systems. Like, obviously, when you talk about deck building, like, it just makes sense. People are like, oh, I like group a bunch of cards together, and that's what I bring into a match. And there's just like a lot of terminology. It's just very easy for people to pick up, and also just like it just lends itself to UI. Like, it's just like the perfect way to actually just like have the display of a like a piece of art connected to like a few different pieces of information. There's only so many ways in a 2D way, like if you're going to display that within UI, that you would want to do it beyond just kind of stepping over the threshold of like what you're saying, like with the building design across metaverse. Like, you can take it too far. And I think that, like, my background is in UI and UX, like, I don't want to just reinvent the wheel in a way that just doesn't make any sense. Like, reinvent it so that it's things that improve UX. Like, don't just reinvent it because you're like,
you don't want to like, reinvent the wheel and then discover that your new invention doesn't roll.
It turns out the door on the ceiling, it doesn't work for a reason.
Yeah. You've still got gravity, so too bad.
I'll come out of the closet and admit that I play a lot of Hearthstone in my day. I still play it from time to time, and even though
we're very proud of you,
thank you.
One of these days on the space, I'm just gonna start freaking you out and just be like, grab a chair by the hearth. It's cold out there.
I will freak you out. No, that'll just give me nostalgic feelings.
I'm personally I love Hearthstone as well. I only draft now because I only play Arena though.
Is that what you're about to say?
Yeah, is it Arena that's the drafting, and that's it? Yeah. You got like I was gonna say I've got like a really bad addiction if I play anything that's got deck building. So it's gonna be a problem with RIP. But like with like Magic the Gathering, like I would literally every waking moment actually sit and like refine theoretical Magic the Gathering decks, like in the early hours of the morning, or just like wake up in the morning, like have a cup of coffee and be like, oh, what about like these two cards?
What I was going to say about Hearthstone though, is that some of the things that I have liked that they've done with the game is when they made an effort to do things that weren't possible in a tabletop physical game. Like just things that you can do in a digital game, like burn mechanisms and stuff like that, I always thought were kind of interesting. Or things that
you can do it in a physical game. It's just that you end up losing cards and it turns into Magic MTG Unglued.
Well, I'm trying to think of ideas, but there are definitely things that happen in Hearthstone that you couldn't do in a physical game. I can't think of any off the top.
Yeah, there's certain things, like even if you could do them in a tabletop setting, like it would take you 10 minutes to facilitate. You know, that kind of
reduce all of your cards by 1 minute. Like that would take so long if you're doing it. I don't know. Yeah, that's a bad example, but
And honestly, like I feel like that's a big reason why no one actually even played the playable version of Pokemon. Like that was actually a really hard game to actually track everything.
All right, I was feeling
the flow.
I was like, yeah, let's go. We're back. We're so back, baby.
We're so back.
Narrator, they were not.
it's just doomed. It's doomed from the beginning. So I don't know how you feel.
Welcome back to Zero Wi-Fi Reserved, the show where we just keep disconnecting. Honestly,
I want to blame it on something. I'm gonna blame on this storm.
Definitely the storm.
We agree. It's not me. It's not my incompetence as a as a technology user. It's the storm. But I'm also a technology user that like still has a like iPhone 9 or something. Like I've got like a new one for work and I hate it.
Wait, are you filming this on your iPhone 9 right now? That might be part of the problem.
That would help.
I don't know what the issue is.
Yeah, maybe switch to like a TI-84 or something.
Yeah, I've just got my black, just got my BlackBerry out, doing that.
That's right. Yeah. Were you in that movie, the BlackBerry movie? I thought I saw you in there. The one.
Was there a BlackBerry movie?
It was a movie about it. Yeah. It has the guy from Always Sunny. So I actually want to see it because apparently he plays a serious role, which I can't really imagine.
Oh, it's about Charlie?
No, not Charlie. Dennis.
What's his name? I love Always Sunny. So my little brother, me and my little brother, like we get along, but we don't really have much that we connect on. Always Sunny was it. Like, I bought him the new season of Always Sunny every year for his birthday. And honestly, like, it's like awesome. Kind of means more to me because, like, that's the main thing that we would chat about because, like, we both really loved it. Really funny show.
It's really cool. I've been rewatching it lately. It's so good. So good.
It's just, like, perfect. The format and just, like, the one-liners and even just, like, the context of the opening title sometimes, like, the gang something something, and just like,
the one where the gang does the blank, the one where the gang loses Wi-Fi.
it'll almost always be some kind of like joke in relation to the opening scene where like it's a juxtaposition to like what you've seen happen. Exactly.
I saw an account on TikTok the other day, and it's all just videos, clips of Ross from Friends with no laugh track, and like how creepy all of his scenes are, like when he's hitting on his cousin, and like anyway, just so many good scenes. And then the top comment on one of them was like, Ross without a laugh track is just Dennis, like the exact same character.
There's like the opening. There's like, what is it? It's like one of the first seasons where they're like, they end up going out to try and pick up at like abortion rallies. And it's just like.
And there's one on either side. Like one's on one side.
Yeah, and they keep like switching sides. They keep switching sides.
So, okay. RIP TCG. Just real quick. You mentioned when you were on 9 o'clock that there's factions. Is there anything more you can share on how those work? Because that's about all we got on the space.
So the factions, there's three factions. One of them is the RIP Mercenaries, which you find out some more on like why they're named that within the lore as we release that. But that's essentially Deadfellas, like the encapsulation of that character type. And then we've got the Divide AI, which is like the oppressive force within the universe. And then the more wild kind of, I guess, origins of the virus and why there was undead in the first place is the Hydron Plague. So that's the three factions that were essentially going to see us out for a long time in terms of just like rooting most of the lore to those three. And then we've got plans for essentially just like you would see across like some other tactical, you know, like three faction games, like you end up with some bleed as you would in real life. So essentially there's like the defectors that can be played across two factions. And then you've got factionless cards that are essentially like utilities and things that are essentially something that wouldn't actually have a real allegiance to a faction. They're essentially just a tool.
Yeah. So it's and the factions have different mechanics. So it's we brought up Hearthstone earlier. It's sort of like how, you know, you have the different Hearthstone leaders where they do different things.
Yeah. So
is it more similar to Hearthstone or more similar to like Magic the Gathering Tribal?
I would say Hearthstone in the fact that it has like the class system. So essentially, when you attach a captain card to your deck, you've got captains and companions. Your captain is what decides your active, like what can you trigger within a battle under your own volition. And then you've got a companion, which is essentially a passive. So in the same way that some card games, like if you're playing Commander, like generally there'll be kind of like an active and passive bundled in. Our system is a split. So you essentially have a bit more flexibility with how you bring that in. In terms of like the play of the factions, like they lean into the lore. So essentially like Divider AI is very much about like defense and control. The Hydron Plague is about like overwhelm and essentially like regen and just being very resilient in that way. And then the RIP Mercenaries is about essentially attack and mobility. So striking hard and being able to shift around. So they essentially lean into those styles of play, and then you end up, like I said, with the middle ground where essentially they end up being kind of like a blend where you see different factions merging together and having a...
Awesome. So what has the reaction been of the community so far since the announcement?
Really great. So essentially what we've always done, and essentially, like, going back to what you were talking about before, like cultivating a community, we've always just been essentially just product driven. Like, so essentially the way that like we always bring products out is the same as Deadfellas. Like, we were purposely essentially just stealth launching Deadfellas. People just happened to get wind of it and it sold out in about 10 minutes. But the same thing with Dead Friends, the same thing with the vaults. Like, we want people to join in because they have either read up on it, or they just understand some point of the vision behind it, or they support us, or they support Deadfellas as a brand and the vision for the brand. So that's the same way with vaults. Like, we just want people that are, you know, either want to play a TCG, or they believe in the vision for what we want to bring to market, or they just believe in us in general. So we're not really a PR blast or like hype driven community. And I think that that, while, you know, it can make us seem quiet sometimes, it's essentially just a sustain. Like, it allows us to be able to have that room to breathe, gives us room to build and actually create what we have said that we want to build. And it doesn't end up with any kind of short-term pivots to try and make people happy in the interim. So I think I'm really excited with how people have actually reacted so far. In terms of just like distribution, it's gone out really well. We have like a sizable amount of treasury in terms of the first editions that the company will be holding, that we're going to really treasure, honestly. Like, it's like there will be a drip of use for user acquisition and things like that. But I think the drip speed would take us like 18 years to actually distribute. So it's just something that like I really want to treasure essentially as a company. Like, it's just an important stage for us. Say when RIP TCG is like 5 years old, 10 years old, it's going to be essentially a legacy item for us. And it's something that, yeah, I just want the company to be able to have as our starting point. And it's also just really good to the way that the markets have been shifting royalties and things like that. It just essentially shores you up and you know that you can look after yourself at the end of the day.
Syke, just wanted to thank you for joining us today. It was really great to hear about all the things you guys are working on. Thanks for your patience through the technical difficulties that we had with Riverside today. And hopefully we'll be able to piece this all together into a cohesive podcast, which, if you're watching this, the answer was yes. So appreciate you, Syke, and we will see you next time. See you on chain. All right, I'm going to end it here, and we'll see what happens. I have no idea.